Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Michael Footer.
And I'm Amanda Farrow.
On each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 79. Now, Epic Games Store is not bleeding out. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the body.
That's going to be a DMCA takedown. Don't do that. We've talked about this, Michael. You can't just randomly burst into everybody else's songs. Okay. Before we get started today, we wanted to take a moment to wish friend of the show, Brandon Huffman, a speedy recovery. Brandon shared on social media that he recently had a heart attack and that he is recovering, and he's been a really good friend to us, so we wanted to let him know that we're thinking about him.
Really glad that you're okay, and take it easy, get better soon.
We'll see you at the next thing, whenever there's a thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so we have a pretty action-packed show today.
We do! I'm really happy about the flow for the show.
It's almost like you're the one that put it together or something.
I do try.
You do a good job. So what are we starting off with today?
All right, so we're kicking off with Activision in the middle of a lawsuit. They have sued the owner of a website called Warzone.com.
Michael, why in the heck would they do that?
Well, you might have recognized that Warzone.com, the name is very similar to Call of Duty Warzone.
Okay, but how long has Warzone.com been around for?
So let's take it way back to the beginning.
Are we going way back?
Way back.
Okay.
So
that
was
really good time travel music. Can you do it one more time?
No, because then we'll be back to the...
Okay.
Now we're even further back.
Yeah, there we go. Now we're all the way back.
Yes. So the two have been squabbling over the Warzone name for a number of months because Warzone.com is actually the home of a Risk-alike. So have you ever played the board game Risk?
I've definitely never wasted a lot of my life playing Risk.
Do you remember how one of the earliest like mobile fads was digital knockoff versions of Risk?
Yes.
Okay, well, Warzone.com is essentially a very bare-bones version of Risk.
Okay.
So it is nothing like Call of Duty Warzone, but let's talk about this.
Okay.
So the owner of the site, Randy Ficker, had his lawyer send Activision a cease and desist demanding that Activision change the name of its game, stop using Warzone's Warzone mark, and abandon the trademark applications, because what happened was Activision had filed a trademark for both Call of Duty Warzone and Warzone.
Okay.
And Warzone.com said, nah-uh-uh, we oppose, because we're Warzone.
Yeah.
So, Activision is now suing in hopes that the courts will say that the company's not infringing. It is not a typical suit that we talk about where they're looking for, where Warzone.com has caused them harm.
Right.
And we'll talk about that in a second. So, Warzone.com never filed a trademark before. They eventually did, but they were started in 2017.
Right, so they haven't been around. It's not like they're brand new, but they also haven't been around for like years and years and years.
Right, but they are older than Call of Duty's Warzone.
They are.
And that does matter.
Yeah, of course.
So Activision says that the games are too different to be confused. Ficker says that he's been bombarded with people who have complaints about Call of Duty Warzone, like, fix your game on Xbox, or I can't log in on PlayStation, or I want dedicated servers or something on PC. Remember? Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 2.
I do.
All right. So, of course, I reached out to Ethan Jacobs.
Well, of course.
Yes.
Ethan
so
knows things.
Ethan is an IP lawyer. He's also the founder of Ethan Jacobs Law. Big thanks to Ethan for taking the time to speak with me about this. So, he thinks it's really unlikely that Activision was not aware of Warzone.com. They say, like, oh, we never heard of you. So,
Is there a small chance that they hadn't?
No. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because when I was working at the Arts Council in Rochester, we were starting a discount card program.
Okay.
And we came up with a lot of different names.
Of course.
And
that's each what you do in the ideation process.
And each one of those names has to go through a conflict check.
Okay.
So the name we landed on was Access. Now, obviously, because we were the Arts and Cultural Council, ACC, so it was Access.
That's actually
pretty good. And we had to, so of course, when we run a conflict check, all of these other business names and trademarks that have the word Access in them pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not about nobody using the word. For instance, right. Our business F Square, there are other F Squareds, which we learned about because apparently one of them is in some trouble with the IRS or something.
No,
the
SEC.
Yeah, not us.
Not
to be
us.
Clear, we are not in trouble with the SEC yet.
Wait, what? Why would we be in trouble with the SEC
ever?
I don't want to.
Look, You've been in this industry as long as I have. You know you don't never put a definitive on something. We're not in trouble yet. We have nothing to announce at this time.
What is happening? That's not okay.
So... So when you do a background check, you find out, like, anybody who's using that name, and while there wasn't a trademark for it, it was in existence. Because you right. don't just do a trademark search, you do a website search.
Okay.
And they had warzone.com.
That's fair.
Like,
no, that's fair. It's fair. But I was asking because it's important that we have that background.
It is. It absolutely is. So Activision absolutely would have been aware of them. So Activision then applies for the trademark. Warzone.com applies for their own trademark and disputes Activision's trademark.
Okay.
All right. It's relatively inexpensive to dispute a trademark, by the way.
Okay.
Okay. So there's a delay for a number of months for ordinary reasons, according to Ethan, mm-hmm. just extensions and that sort of thing. So it wasn't COVID related. It wasn't anything nefarious. It was just normal reasons why these things get delayed.
Right. Because these are the courts.
Activision says, all right, this wasn't the court yet. This was the U.S. Patent Trademark Office.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It's okay. Now we get the courts involved.
Okay, now we get the courts involved.
Now we get the courts involved. So Activision says, you know what? We're just going to take this to the courts and have the courts determine what's going on.
Okay.
So they file a complaint, which, of course, immediately leads to the USPTO suspending the deliberations on this.
Okay.
Because now the courts are going to handle it and the USPTO will act after the courts decide. Mm-hmm. So what Activision is looking for is a declaratory judgment. Oh, thank you.
Would
so
you
much.
Like something to drink? You seem a little parched. Could you... You know, I'm sitting here, like, nicely drinking my coffee, and I noticed you were coughing. I'm just like, oh, here's some coffee, sweetie. And you just had to make a bit of it.
Did I make a bit of everything?
Ugh. Okay.
Thank you for letting me have a bit of your coffee.
Ooh.
So Activision has filed for a declaratory judgment, which says, as I mentioned earlier, that not that Warzone.com has done any harm, but they want the courts to determine whether or not Activision's use would infringe on Warzone.com's use.
Right, okay.
If the answer is no, this wouldn't infringe, you're too different, no one would confuse the two, then they can both exist and Activision can move forward.
If
the courts say no, they're too close.
Right.
And you would at that point be prohibiting, and we'll talk about this too, we'll be prohibiting Warzone.com from using the name where they have actually priority.
Yes,
because they were in existence first in the U.S. courts anyway. It's different in different territories. So that's what Activision is looking for. The courts are also being asked to allow Activision's application to proceed and to prohibit Warzone.com from filing their own trademark application. So, hey, we're not going to infringe. It wouldn't be infringing, but also screw you guys. We don't want you to have a trademark either.
Oh, that's the worst.
They also want to bar Warzone.com from interfering in Activision's trademark, which means suing them or anything like that.
Okay.
So
this is really complicated. Like, for something that seems relatively simple, it feels to me like this is a David and Goliath situation where Warzone.com is very teeny tiny and Activision is enormous, and it seems like Activision is just wielding its power. It's like, oh, we don't care that you were here first. No one cares.
Yes, and.
Okay, let's continue. I'm speculating. I love it when Mike leads me through legal stuff because I get to learn so much about American courts that I didn't know before.
Yeah, and some of this stuff I knew before, and some of this Ethan was really able to educate me on, and I'm really grateful for it.
Okay,
so declaratory judgment actions only happen when there's a lawsuit threat. And remember, Warzone.com sent a C&D and said, if you don't stop doing this, they're going to be trouble. Mind you, you're right, David and Goliath. So David's like, hey, Goliath, stop using my name. I'm going to punch you in the shin. And Goliath's like, here's a lawsuit.
Stomp.
So
it's gross and bad.
Activision says in its complaint that Warzone.com threatened injunctive and financial relief. So who knows what Warzone.com said in their C&D, like, pay us $3 million so that you can use the Warzone name.
I mean... There have been plenty of times, like, let me come at this from my expertise, which is in domains, mm-hmm. right? So back when I used to build websites, there were definitely times where I had to go bid on website domain names. And that can get pricey as heck. Even if there is an actual existing website on there, you can still go bid on the domain and you can go talk to the website owner and be like, listen, what would it take? What would it take for me to take over this domain mm-hmm. name from you? You know, it's not unheard of. In fact, there's like, there are brokers that do that.
Honestly, what I could see happening here is Activision winning this and then saying that Warzone, and trying to use the courts to strong arm Warzone.com out of its own domain.
Yep, I agree.
So one thing that could happen is a coexistence agreement where, so this, and there's actually precedence for this in the game industry. And I'll talk about that in a second.
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited to learn more about this. Okay.
So what they could say is like, all right, Activision says it will not use the Warzone name for any strategy or digital board games. And then Warzone.com would not be allowed to make a first-person shooter, a military first-person shooter, using the Warzone name. So that's how a coexistence agreement works. You get to use it for this, and I get to use it for this, and everybody lives happily ever after. Do you remember that there was another Mojang game called Scrolls?
Kind of, yeah.
So Bethesda wasn't thrilled with that.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh,
so my Bethesda goodness. Sued or attempted to, I don't remember if they actually filed or if there was just, if they wielded the stick. I think they might have sued. And Bethesda was kind of surgical. Again, I don't know how they're going to be under Microsoft. I assume that Microsoft Legal is going to kind of drive that ship.
I would imagine so.
But Bethesda was really surgical about its lawsuits.
Yes. And usually they only picked fights they knew they could win.
Right. And so Mojang
was was that a Goliath versus Goliath situation?
Not at the time. Not at the time.
Mojang wasn't that big at the time, right?
No. And Scrolls was essentially a digital card game. So Bethesda says, okay, you're not allowed to use it for X. We're not allowed to use it for, we're not allowed to use it for Y.
Oh, I'm going.
But what's interesting is, like, looking back at this, it's like, okay, so Scrolls did not work. Mojang closed the game.
Sure.
It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And now there's an Elder Scrolls card game. So I'm wondering, and I didn't look up the timing because it just clicked to me as we were talking, like, oh, wait, something like this has happened before in the game industry.
It's not even in our notes.
I don't think the Elder Scrolls card game, which is Elder Scrolls Legends?
Elder Scrolls Legends, yeah.
I don't think that existed. There was no overlap there.
Oh, I would imagine not. Elder Scrolls Legends came out in, what, like 2016? I think 2017,
something like that.
Yeah,
and I think Scrolls was long dead by that point.
I would imagine,
at least a couple of years. So it was really interesting that after all of that,
that happened.
So I think what happened was the coexistence agreement might have expired when that happened.
Sure.
So just as a reminder, Warzone.com does have priority because they are older. They've been using the name even, and that's the thing in the United States. You don't have to file a trademark or a copyright. The U.S. courts and the USPTO looks at term of use. Mm-hmm. So if you've been a company that existed since the early 1900s and you've used a name and you never filed your trademark, then you still have priority.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were like, Warzone brand cola, we shoot people in the face. Shoot your taste buds in the face. There it is.
Shoot your taste buds in the face. I'm going to need a second. That's not okay.
And Call of Duty's like, hey, Warzone Cola, you're not allowed to use that trademark anymore. Warzone Cola would be like, we're going to shoot your taste buds in the face because we've been around forever.
Okay, well, I'm really glad that we had this stimulating taste bud conversation.
And of course, there are other people using the Warzone name.
I'm sure.
And none of them are Activision, though, which is why when you have Warzone.com amidst a field of other small players kind of working in the interactive entertainment space that are using the name Warzone, it's no big deal. Nobody's really going to muscle each other out. When you have Activision enter the picture and they're huge.
Activision enters the chat.
Exactly. So they're speaking in like 30-point font and everybody's in your normal 10, 11, 12-point font.
Yeah.
So
A lot of yelling.
So Activision entering the conversation really changes it because now you have this one player who is so much larger than everybody else and it changes the conversation.
Yeah, it definitely does.
So, there's info that we don't have, and this happens all the time when we seek legal comment.
Yeah.
And it's something that we need to frame out. So, in this situation, there's information, as always, that we do not have. And one is...
So, what don't we have?
We don't know what Warzone was asking for specifically from Activision. So, if they were asking for an amount, maybe they went to Activision and said, you got to pay us $100 million.
That would be...
A lot of money,
somewhat
right?
Somewhat absurd.
Yes.
For a domain, yeah.
And the other thing, as we talked about, was Activision going to use a Warzone trademark to bully out Warzone.com.
Yeah, and that to me is a likely scenario. It genuinely is a likely scenario, given everything that we know about Activision and their attack dog tactics.
Oh, if you don't know what we're talking about, we recently talked about Activision hiring Mike Pompeo, that former Secretary of State, former head of the CIA's, watchdog, bulldog guy, his right-hand man.
Yeah. Gross. Soft like part, loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, real loud. Don't like that.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, moving on.
Can we talk about things that I do like?
Yes.
Okay, MPD has published its March 2021 report on the U.S. gaming market. I love going through these reports. Like, yeah. It makes me
Matt does happy. Such a good job, and his Twitter threads really break everything down. We get more information from Matt than we used to when I was a Game Informer. The person who Matt succeeded did a good job, but nothing like
what Matt does. He did a great job with the reports, but not necessarily putting the reports in context. Mm-hmm. Like, Matt always puts the reports in context.
Yep, it's wonderful.
So this is a particularly important piece of information, because this is the first month that provides comparative data within the pandemic period. And yep. We're going to get to that, because we're also going to be talking at the bottom of the half of the show about what's been going on with live streaming platforms.
Yep. This is really interesting. This month is so important for data, and this quarter,
yeah.
especially moving into Q2, it's so yep. important for data.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start to dig into it. So as we noted, analyst Matt Piscatella notes that chip and other component shortages will play huge roles, as the challenges are on the supply side rather than the demand side. So, a reminder, new consoles and GPUs are selling out immediately with every restock.
Yep. So again, that's a limiting factor. So when you talk about what we know is that if there were more consoles in the market, if there were more GPUs in the supply chain,
they would be sold through.
Right. So we don't know what the maximum is at this point. We mm-hmm. don't know where things are going to settle out until supply, you know, matches demand.
Absolutely. And it hasn't been able to match demand at all.
And according to NVIDIA, it's likely not going to for some time. And I think that's in the quick hits later.
All right. So, you know who's continuing to eat everybody's lunch?
I wonder.
Would it perhaps be the Nintendo Switch?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So
even that they released that new GameCube blue color. It looks, it's the purple, that beautiful purple color.
It's a gorgeous indigo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an indigo color. So it looks kind of blue, looks kind of purple.
I think it matches the original GameCube color.
It does look like it matches the original GameCube color. So anyway, the Switch is obviously showing no signs of slowing down. There's a lot to love about what Nintendo is doing, both with its first and third party development. Mm-hmm. I mean, their Nindies presentation was excellent. Yep. Nintendo is going to continue to do what Nintendo does, and Nintendo is going to continue to eat everybody's lunch.
It's true.
What else is going on, Mike?
Also here to stay, subscriptions. I think that the pandemic accelerated the way that subscriptions took root. I think it was, given Game Pass being the market leader,
mm-hmm.
there was already a great chance that subscriptions were going to make a go of it.
Yeah.
But the pandemic definitely accelerated it. The value that you get from something like Game Pass specifically, but not just Game Pass.
Yeah.
The value that you get from that, especially when you have new players coming on, it's such an easy sell. Oh, you picked up a console during the pandemic because you want to play games. What if you spent $10 a month or $15 a month and had access to over 100 games?
Yeah. And not just like little vaporware.
Games you've heard of.
Yeah, games you've actually heard of. Not like these little weird games that don't necessarily work. I'm looking at you, Nintendo Wii eShop.
Ha!
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about what the post-pandemic decrease is looking like. Because remember, when you and I sat down in March, it was, between March and April, we had the conversation of the long tail
yep.
of the post-pandemic slump.
Right, and I think that there was still hope that we were going to be out of this in 3-6 months, and that it wouldn't have enough time. The longer the pandemic went on, the more users that were acquired. And acquisition, as we've always talked about on the show,
is very expensive.
It's very expensive. But when you're the only form of entertainment that's social,
it's really important that we bring that into context as well, because gaming isn't necessarily just about consuming the content. It's about creating social experiences around the content.
Absolutely.
So
that's a good point.
You know, what we have seen is that there has been a slowdown-ish, but it has very little to do with the consumer and a lot more to do with the content.
Right. And that's the other thing that we talked about when we had Matt on the show multiple times last year. He talked about the fact that we were going to see a number of effects from the pandemic. And one was GPU, like the GPU shortages. Matt nailed that. Absolutely.
The hardware shortages for the consoles, which yep. we already knew was going to be a problem.
But the other one was delays, and we have seen so many games, so many big games that were slated for this year get bumped out. It's not that we're lacking for content. It's not that there are good games, that there aren't good games coming out.
It's that
there have been a number of delays, whether later in the year or into 2022.
We're seeing a lot of big games being delayed into 2022. There are still quite a few AAA amazing games that are slated to come out this year. You know, the next really big one is going to be Resident Evil Village.
Sure. And then Pokemon Snap's coming out, and Nier Replicant is coming out, which I think is going to do big, big numbers.
That's going to do gangbusters. Lots of people love the Nier series. So it's not to say there aren't great games coming out this year. It's to say that there have been a number of setbacks, a number of delays that are going to push out the post-pandemic slump even a little bit more.
Well, interestingly, what Matt says, and this is a reframing based on the data that we have now. Remember, what we talked about a year ago and our expectations a year ago was based on, a lot of unknowns.
Yeah.
And we talked about that. Hey, as things start to crystallize, we'll have a better idea. But we're a year plus in at this point.
Yeah.
And it looks like because of all of that user acquisition,
that
even with attrition, things are going to be better. So we might not reset. In fact, we're likely not going to reset to pre-pandemic numbers. We are going to see a dip, but it's not going to be that big.
It's not going to be a chasm.
Right. So we are still likely to see cyclical growth next year.
Yeah. So I think that's really, really interesting. So let's start to dig into the numbers, because we want to frame this conversation around the actual concrete numbers. So the total spend for March hit a brand new record at $5.6 billion. That is up 18% year over year. Q1 spending was up to $14.9 billion, which is up 30% year over year. Hardware sales did gangbusters, and they were up 47% year over year for a brand new March record of $680 million. The record before was set in March of 2008.
Now remember, this is only the U.S. market.
This is only the U.S. market.
Yep.
This is not global. Like, it is just, what? Listen, what else do we have to spend our money on right now?
Exactly.
I can't even buy clothes. Like, what? Where am I going to wear them? I'm going to wear them to the grocery store? Like, nobody cares what I wear to the grocery store. Or Target.
Yeah. Switch was the best-selling platform for both units and dollars. Now, remember, it has been the top-selling for units for...
Ever.
25 months, something like that?
It's been like that for quite some time. I think when I started at... when I started at Game Daily, we started seeing the Switch take the top spot every month.
But now it's also the top seller for dollars. It was last month also. Remember, we didn't cover NPD last month because that hit on our break, and we didn't go back to it.
No.
But I went back and looked. So PS5 had been top for dollars since its launch, and then in February and then March also, Switch reclaimed the top spot for dollars.
Now, speaking of the PS5, it is still the fastest selling console in US history in both unit and dollar sales based on lifetime sales for the console's 5 months on the market.
Yep. Accessories, again, up. They hit a new March record of $300 million, up 26% year over year. And quarter one, accessory sales were $717 million, up 42% year over year. So that's your mice, your keyboards, your headsets, your controllers.
Yeah, and listen, those new Astro earbuds, they look pretty good.
They do.
They look pretty good.
Hey, Astro, hit us up.
Yeah, you should hit us up and send us some of those earbuds. They're pretty nice. Anyway.
PlayStation 5 DualSense controllers were the top accessory for
that's
March.
That's not surprising.
For the first quarter.
Yeah, that's really good. All right, so Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War, wow, it continues to be a friggin' mouthful.
Yeah.
Was the top game of the month, the quarter, and the trailing 12 months. But we need to talk about your favorite game right now. I kind of fell off of it because, listen, Story of Seasons has, like, got its hook for me.
Monster Hunter Rise was the second bestseller for the month and the top seller on Switch.
Oh, we love
it. Second highest lifetime sales already, only behind Monster Hunter World.
Monster Hunter World sold incredibly well. It was a brand new life for the Monster Hunter IP, because prior to that, if you all will remember, Monster Hunter was not an accessible franchise.
Right. Monster Hunter World not only added accessibility, but it simultaneously launched on both PlayStation 4 and Xbox, and later came to PC.
That's right.
So most of the Monster Hunter games had previously only appeared on one platform. The fact that the Switch launch in its first month is already beating every other game. So there was games on the PSP, the Vita, PS2, PS3, right? All those games, better than them.
Yeah.
One platform. And it's eventually coming to PC. I think it will eventually overtake World.
I would tend to agree. I think that there's a lot to love about Monster Hunter Rise. Let's talk about Outriders. Outriders is a brand new contender, and it is number 3 on the list, which should make Square Enix very happy, despite the game's serious tech issues.
Yeah, people losing their inventories.
Ugh, like...
Shout out to Adam, who lost his entire inventory.
Oh, our poor buddy. That's no good. Avengers fell off the top 20 again. Listen. All I want to do is play Avengers with my friends, and the game is broken.
Yeah.
Fix my game. I would like to play Avengers. It is a really good game.
Yes.
Okay, let's...
Yep, so that's everything. Those are all the big hits from NPD. But now, it's time for M&A Minute.
It's never a minute.
Although this one's not terribly long.
This one's not super long. All right, TikTok owner ByteDance has acquired C4 Games. C4 made the only in China Command & Conquer spinoff Red Alert Online. No terms have been shared.
The Games Fund has launched a $50 million early stage investing fund that will support companies in Europe and the US.
Woo-hoo.
The first investments have already been assigned, and the group expects that rounds will be around $2 million for pre-seed and Series A, and up to $5 million for follow-on rounds alongside other investors. The Games Fund is managed by Maria Koshmola and Ilya Eremiev. Koshmola has been the investment director of MGVC since its founding in 2017. Mm-hmm. Eremiev has been involved with Game Insight and Sparasoft, while also leading investments in 10 companies for MGCV. Or I guess it's MGVC. MGVC.
Transcription
typo.
Error.
Other partners include former executives of MGVC, one of the largest game funds in the world, Gem Capital, Sergei Titov, a founding employee and former technical director and chief technology officer at Riot Games.
All right, so this next one comes from Nico Partners analyst Daniel Ahmad on Twitter. So Daniel noted that Tencent has acquired a 20.6% interest in Shenzhen's indie studio, Surgical Scalpel Studio. The team's game, Project Boundary, is a space shooter coming out on PC and PS4 later this year. Daniel also says that Tencent's 2021 M&A activity is already higher than its 2020 spend. We told y'all.
Yeah, this is going to be a big M&A year.
It's an enormous year. It's going to be an enormous year for M&A. It's already been an enormous year, and we're sitting in April.
Mm-hmm. AppLovin has completed its IPO.
Good for them.
Yeah, AppLovin is a mobile services company offering user acquisition and monetization solutions. Brought in $2 billion through its offering, which values the company at a whopping $28.6 billion.
Ooh, that's huge. AppLovin has made some serious moves in the mobile industry. I am really happy for them. So let's talk about more IPO stuff. Let's talk about Krafton, the parent company of PUBG Corp, which has filed for IPO approval. The company will be listed on the Korea Exchange and has revealed its revenue of 1.67 trillion won, which is $1.5 billion US in 2020, with operating profit of 774 billion won, which is $694 million US. The valuation is about $17.9 billion, according to analysts in Seoul, which is less than Bloomberg reported in January of this year, to the tune of $9 billion US.
Yeah, so that report was way, way over.
Way off.
But still, that PUBG, still raking in that money.
Well, and you know what? We're going to get to that when we get into the streaming numbers a little bit later, because they're seeing some serious bump from PUBG Mobile.
Yep. Last one, IO Interactive has opened a new studio in Barcelona, Spain. This is IO's third studio, joining locations in Copenhagen and Malmo. The new team will be working on the upcoming James Bond game,
yeah,
the Hitman franchise, and an unannounced new IP. Additionally, CEO Hakana Brock shared that Hitman 3 is 300% more successful than Hitman 2 already.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
You know what? Good for them. I'm happy for them. They deserve it. So, now, Mike, what time is it?
It's time for Quick Hits.
All right, one of Roblox's largest games, Adopt Me, hit a huge milestone this week. The latest update, Ocean Egg, propelled the game to a record 1.92 million, wait for it, concurrent users. Concurrent!
That's so many people.
It's amazing. The previous record for the game was $1.78
million. The big question for me is, if all those people want to be adopted, who is left to do the adopting?
Me.
Oh, okay.
Me.
You're
going to
adopt 1.9. It's going to be a lot of cooking.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even consider that. It's a lot of cooking. But listen, I'm up for it.
Yep. Reuters is reporting that GameStop is on the hunt for a new CEO. This follows Chewy founder Ryan Cohen's appointment as chair of the board of directors last week. George Sherman hasn't stepped down, but if the report is accurate, it would be the completion of a major coup by elements of the board that want to minimize brick and mortar in favor of e-commerce.
And look, we're not going to go too deep into this right now. I don't think that's a bad idea, considering that the market has pivoted more towards e-commerce and more towards digital as years go by, but the idea of turning GameStop into a competitor for Amazon distresses me.
And GameStop's e-commerce experience is absolutely terrible. GameStop recently replaced its CFO and chief operating officer, and Cohen has clearly influenced the hire of some former Chewy executives, including Andrea Wolf as vice president of brand development, Nita Pacifico as senior vice president of e-commerce, and Kelly Durkin as senior vice president of customer care.
Devolver has announced a partnership with Moose Toys to create a line of figures based on Mediatonic's Fall Guys. That is so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I will be buying them. The press release noted that while Devolver is no longer the game's publisher since Mediatonic's acquisition by Epic Games, it does still have the merchandising rights.
Very interesting. So this gives you an insight. If you remember the Raw Fury contract that we talked about, and there are provisions in those contracts about merchandising rights and that sort of thing, this is why those exist.
This is why those exist. It's so this really was important.
Normally might not have included this, but I thought that piece of it was very interesting and something to talk about.
And also because those Fall Guys toys are going to be awesome.
Yes. Apex Legends, after two years being on the market, has crossed the 100 million player mark.
Good for them. Yeah. I've been seeing lots of our stream team playing Apex Legends. It makes me want to get into it. If only I wasn't extremely crappy at those kinds of games.
Yes.
Twitch. Me too. Let's talk about Twitch, though, yeah. Because like we're gonna dive deeper into some numbers with Twitch in a bit. But Twitch announced that it has purged a whopping 7.5 million accounts that were found to have engaged in follow botting and view botting. And we're not going to go into why this is really important, but it does go against Twitch's terms of service.
Absolutely. In fact, one piece of information I saw, Dot Esports reporting yesterday that XQC lost 2.2 million followers in the purge.
Oh, no.
7.5 million accounts purged. 2.2 of them were following him.
Oh no, couldn't have happened.
Stop faking clout.
Couldn't have happened to a nicer person. Yep. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about Starbreeze.
Yeah, they signed a deal with PopReach to relaunch the mobile entry in the Payday Ooh. Series, Payday Crime War. Starbreeze will get a $250,000 non-recoupable upfront, and that gives PopReach the source code to the mobile game and access to Payday 2 content. Soft launch is planned for end of 2021. Essentially, they sold the game for $250,000.
You know what? They are getting very close to their financial solvency. And you know what? I'm rooting for them. I really am rooting for Starbreeze. They have come so far and they fell so hard in 2018.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is the big piece is, okay, yeah, they got $250,000 for it, which is not a lot of money.
No.
But this relationship, because that means that PopReach is going to have a ton of content to pull from for updates, pulling from Payday 2, because look at how much content there is for Payday 2 at this point.
There is a lot going on there. Speaking of a lot going on there, let's talk about the PlayStation 5 update. So this will allow users to use external USB drives as cold storage for PS5 titles. You may remember our trials and tribulations with our PlayStation 5. This was not part of our problem, but this is part of our storage problem. So we're very happy that we'll be able to use USB drives for cold storage. This was something that was honestly missing since launch, as the internal storage of the PS5 is relatively small. So prior to that cold storage feature, users just had to completely re-download titles. Now, we've talked about data caps. Mm-hmm. In a world of data caps, this is an enormous problem. So no word yet on memory expansion using the console's NVMe port. Additionally, you'll be able to share play from the PS5 to people on PS4. That's cool.
Yeah, you could already log into your PS5 from a PS4, but SharePlay is something different. It's when you're
basically passing a controller back and forth. And it's really interesting because, like, that's how you and I ended up playing a number of games together. Yep. Like, I think the Resident Evil 7 demo.
Oh, yeah. We played that over and over and over
again. When I was living in Vancouver, and it was a lot.
There was a little PK came out.
Yeah, it was a lot.
They're also adding a bunch of features to the mobile companion app, including storage management
and
a better store search.
Yeah, really, really good. So what's going on with Nintendo?
Yeah, so remember we talked about component shortages. Yeah, in an interview with Nikkei, Nintendo President Shintaro Furukawa has indicated that Switch shortages may continue for a while. Again, due to global shortages of semiconductors, that's affecting a wide range of devices. Again, we mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Nintendo has enough what they need for what they need to produce for short term, but prolonged shortages may impact the company's ability to meet demand. What's interesting to me is how this intersects with the latest reports of a Switch Pro. Is that even going to be feasible in 2021?
It can't. No, it absolutely can't. And one of the interesting things that I've seen from a translator that I follow on Twitter is that there has been no word in Japan from this, that they are planning this. Not even whispers of this in Japan. So all of the speculation that we've heard is coming from the West entirely. It's not even coming from Nintendo.
Yeah, and it's coming from manufacturers. That's where the sourcing is coming from.
Exactly. And I don't think that manufacturers are necessarily dialed into Nintendo's long-term plans when it comes to this. There is no way, considering the semiconductor shortages, that they would even announce something like this year. I would imagine they will do a console refresh within the next year or two. But again, the manufacturer shortages are going to prevent a lot of technological innovations from really, you know, finding root.
And as we mentioned earlier, likewise, NVIDIA says that it expects GPU shortages to continue, quote, for much of this year.
I just want a new video card.
I know.
I just want a new video card. I mean, my 1080 Ti is actually really
well, great. And my new PC and Mike's new PC is being held up by the video card. I think they have all the other components at this point.
Of course they do. All right, so let's continue with NVIDIA. So NVIDIA has created its own metaverse, just not for end users. The company's newly announced Omniverse platform is a collaborative virtual environment that allows engineers to collaborate on projects in a space that simulates real-world physics. This is super cool. The platform was released in beta in December, and more than 17,000 users have tinkered with it. Some users include BWM.
No, BMW.
Okay.
Again, that's a second place in the
notes. I thought that maybe BWM was something I just didn't know. It was an American company that I wasn't familiar with.
No.
Listen, sometimes Mike's fingers just go faster than his brain. It's fine.
I fixed it in the show notes, hon.
Thank you. So, not BWM, in fact, but BMW. And I'm keeping this in the show, by the way.
That's
We're
fair.
Just going to keep it. And Ericsson, Adobe, Autodesk, Epic, Blender, and others are providing application support. This is so cool.
It's neat, right?
It's so cool.
The whole real world physics thing.
Like, can you imagine the things that you could create and innovate on in a space where the stakes are so much lower and you don't have to worry about potentially killing yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
That Iron Man suit's going to happen.
I hope so.
Yep.
I'm pulling for people.
All right, here's one.
This one I'm not pulling for.
Yeah, Quantic Dream has scored a victory in court. An appeal in the case over alleged toxic work environment has succeeded, vacating a previous judgment against the studio. This was a huge story in early 2018 across three different major French newspapers in which sources describe racist and sexist behavior rampant at the studio. The appeal vindicates Quantic Dream, according to their statement, but there is still one more appeal that could happen, but there's no word yet if the plaintiffs will pursue it.
It's really strange. There's one other major company in France that had some similar problems.
Who you be talking about?
Continuing on, let's talk about Capcom. This is kind of crappy. Capcom has issued a final report on its security breach that exposed tens of thousands of user records. Now, we have gone through this in previous episodes. The company says that the attack was executed through an old backup VPN device at Capcom USA. Listen, update your damn VPN devices or pull them out. Listen, information security is very important.
It's true.
COVID and working under quarantine led them to put the old device back in service as a backup. Thankfully, Capcom was able to finally confirm that no credit card information was compromised in the attack. If you want to know why this irritates me so much, you can DM me about this or at me on Twitter. I used to work with VPNs all the time. My background's in computer science and security, so yikes on bikes.
Also, interesting thing that happened this week, and maybe unrelated, the Capcom store in the USA is going out of business. They're closing it, and I think they're looking for a partner to run it.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah.
That's probably for the best.
Creative Assembly has opened up a new studio in West Sussex, UK. This is Creative Assembly's third location and currently employs 800 people. The new location houses a relocated motion capture facility.
Cool.
Creative Assembly is currently working on Total War Warhammer 3.
Woohoo!
I'm excited about that. And a new sci-fi shooter IP. Total War franchise has sold more than 36 million games and has monthly active users of 1.5 million. I am one of them.
I know you are. I'm very happy for you. I'm happy for the two of you.
Oh,
truly.
Oh, thank you.
I really am.
We're very happy together.
I know you are.
Me and my lizard men.
I know.
Oh, God. I won't say the name.
Don't say the name. Okay, anyway, moving on. Amazon has canceled its Lord of the Rings MMO. Bloomberg broke the news, which was confirmed by Amazon. The cancellation was pinned on a failure to come to terms with Tencent, and those working on it will be moved to other teams. So the MMO was in development by Athlon Games. If you remember, was a subsidiary of what? Layu Technologies.
Uh-huh.
If you will recall, Layu was acquired by Tencent in December. Which is why Tencent is in the mix.
Yes.
So the big issue here, the overriding issue, is that this is the third high-profile failure for Amazon Games, with Breakaway, which was a MOBA-style sports game, and Crucible, a hero shooter, both falling completely flat. Actually, Breakaway was just straight up canceled before it went.
And Crucible was released and then unreleased. Ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba.
That's just mouth farts. The company still has Luna, cloud gaming service that is in testing, and the upcoming MMO New World, which got great buzz during its last closed beta test with 345,000 max concurrent users and 11.1 million hours watched, according to Twitch Tracker.
Viewers. Yeah, concurrent viewers.
Okay.
Yeah, on Twitch. It was a big hit on Twitch.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a cool looking game. Yeah. I want to play it. Yeah. It looks neat.
Yeah, the combat, it's very action-y.
I like that.
I know. That might get me to play it.
That's very my style of MMO. I love playing MMOs. Like, listen, I've been playing MMOs since, like, 1998?
Toodaloo.
I like going back in time. Like, started playing at Ultima Online. When the hell did I start playing that? Oh, God, I'm so old. So, yes, I've been playing MMOs for a really long time. So I've seen MMOs in almost every iteration of what an MMO can be. The MMOs that I really miss are the ones that try something different. It looks like New World is going to try something different. Mm-hmm. It's like what it reminds me of, not from like a flavor perspective, but it reminds me of Secret World.
Yeah.
And Secret World to me is a cherished MMO because it did things different.
Yep.
So anyway.
The other thing there is, and that game got a lot of flack up front because of its colonialism tones.
And the colonialism stuff apparently has, you know, they're in the process of addressing it. We can have a conversation about problematic colonialism and the fact that the combat system looks cool as heck.
Absolutely. I didn't want to talk about that without noting some of the optics challenges the game has had.
Absolutely.
Especially in the context of Amazon clearly not understanding the game's market.
Or its workers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a story for a different podcast.
It really is.
And those were quick hits.
And now it's a break. Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative. And along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz. And we're back. So we have a couple more.
Two more stories.
And remember how at the top of the show I said we'd dive into some numbers from the live streaming platforms?
Yes.
So first of all, I am working on...
Give me data.
Listen, game industry, you need to feed us data. It makes us really happy. Feed us data.
Read me, Seymour.
Oh, never mind. I don't know why I do things. I don't know why I say things.
Feed me data. Oh, yeah.
Stop it. What the hell? Okay. So while Mike goes and laughs himself into a coma, I am doing larger analysis about this on Virtual Economy's site this week. I went back and I took a look at all of the data from all of last year and into the first quarter of this year. And this is from Streamlabs and Stream Hatchet. So the report details the numbers for all three of the major live streaming platforms. That includes Twitch, YouTube Gaming Live, that is not YouTube Gaming. Remember that YouTube Gaming is its own separate thing because that's VOD. And Facebook Gaming. Two-thirds of the major streaming platforms saw record numbers in this quarter for hours watched, which is what we're most interested in because that's what matters for marketers. Now, listen, we're also looking at record numbers for concurrent views. We're looking at record numbers for hours streamed as well, but those are less interesting in terms of what the industry really cares about, and that's like how much people are engaging with the content. So let's talk about it. So total hours watched for the first quarter of 2021 for Twitch, they hit a record of 6.34 billion hours watched.
Yikes on bikes.
YouTube Gaming Live, 1.37 billion hours watched, and Facebook Gaming for the first time hit over 1 billion hours with 1.06 billion hours watched.
So Twitch is clearly the giant purple gorilla in the room.
Twitch has also seen a, like, and we'll get into this, and I'm doing a deeper dive this week, so if you want more granularity on the numbers, I am going to get into it. Mm-hmm. So let's dive a little bit deeper just for this quarter, though. So just chatting was the most watched category on Twitch for two quarters in a row, and it hit the top three for, it hit the top three categories in Q3 of 2020, and it has grown 44% since then.
Holy
it Lord. Now accounts for 12% of all content on Twitch, with 754 million hours watched.
That's wild.
Viewership is at an all-time high, as I said, with 6.34 billion hours watched. That is a 16.5 increase quarter over quarter.
Wow.
Okay.
This is sequential.
That is sequential. Okay. We're going to get to year over year now.
Okay.
So year over year, viewership on Twitch has doubled, 3.1 billion. In Q1 of 2020 to 6.34 billion in Q1 of 2021.
Was that 2020 or 2019?
No, it was 2021.
Okay.
Or 2020, sorry.
Got it.
That was a typo.
I'm not the only one who makes typos! Thank goodness!
Okay, but we already knew that I make typos. You edit my work. Like, hello.
So you should be editing my work in the show
notes. I think I need to start editing the show notes. Like, who lets you near a keyboard?
Oh gosh, no one.
Okay, so what do we got for context around this, Mike? What are your thoughts about Twitch's growth over the last year?
I mean, a lot of this is pandemic related, and I'm very interested to see what numbers look like when people can't have Twitch up at their desks because they're back in an office.
Why wouldn't you have Twitch up if you're back at your desk at your office?
Might be blocked at your workplace.
Weird! I don't like it. Okay, so let's go and talk about YouTube Gaming Live. So the most watched category on YouTube Gaming Live was Garena Free Fire, which is a battle royale game.
It's a really popular one.
Yeah, it's super popular on mobile, and that was at 148 million hours watched in comparison to, I'm sorry, what was it? 754 million hours watched over on Twitch. Okay. There's a reason for that. Viewership at YouTube Gaming Live is down 28.6% quarter over quarter. So that's a sequential look at last quarter and this quarter, from 1.92 billion to 1.37 billion hours watched. Now, however, year over year, hours are up 28%. 1.07 billion hours to 1.37 billion hours. So, I mean, like, the growth is there, but it's still a tiny little platform in comparison to...
Yeah, but what happened? I'm curious, what happened here between Q4 and Q1?
I'm not sure yet, because I haven't finished my analysis.
Okay.
But
that's my big question coming out of this.
But if you want more of that information, come and find me on the Virtual Economy website this week, because awesome. I am looking to publish this by midweek.
Awesome.
All right, so let's take a look at Facebook Gaming, because if you will all remember last year, and again, this is going to be in my story, Mixer closed.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Mixer closed down and tried to send the vast majority of its streamers over to Facebook Gaming. They actually managed to send a good number of their partners over.
But a lot of people said, nah. I think partners did because there was financial incentive. I think everybody else was like, nah.
Because the numbers just weren't there, and also because Facebook is extremely evil.
Yes.
So, Facebook Gaming continues to skyrocket. It is closing the gap with YouTube Gaming Live such that the difference between the two streaming platforms is only 300 million hours watched. In comparison to the 1 billion hours from Q4 2020.
So, they narrowed the gap by 700 million hours, is what you're saying? Got it.
It's enormous. So, like I said, viewership broke a billion hours watched for the first time ever. Quarter over quarter, viewership grew 15% from 901 million to 1.06 billion. Year over year, the platform has grown a staggering 90.8%.
And that's the Mixer effect.
That is partially the Mixer effect. The other portion of this is that it seems to me like people are moving away from YouTube Gaming Live to Facebook.
Interesting.
It is very interesting. And part of that is not just the pandemic, that is also the U.S. election.
Ew.
So...
Now, God, remember, I hate Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook sucks. Now, remember how I said when we were talking about Krafton and PUBG, how we were going to talk about the numbers around PUBG Mobile?
Yep.
So the most popular streaming category on Facebook Gaming was PUBG Mobile. And at that, it was at 254 million hours watched. Now, in comparison to YouTube, which was 148 million hours watched, like, Facebook Gaming is losing ground.
Yeah.
Pretty significantly. So, to close out our whole conversation about the numbers for the first quarter, and remember, now we're looking at year over year. right? We're comparing pandemic to pandemic at this point. The most popular streaming categories for the quarter included Just Chatting, like I said, League of Legends, and Grand Theft Auto 5.
So I have a thought.
Sure.
I think Facebook is actually in the position to hurt the most from post-pandemic return to office.
Because Facebook is
likely going to be blocked in more offices than, let's say, Twitch.
Well, yeah, because most offices probably don't even think to block Twitch.
Exactly. Because Facebook, on the other hand, yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be really interesting. And, you know, we're talking about the long tail effect, right? And we're talking about how there might be that slump. Taking a look at a lot of the numbers for this live streaming platforms over the last year, and I looked at those charts, they are not just up, they are almost a straight line.
Yikes.
It is amazing. Not just the quarter over quarter growth, but the year over year growth for each of these platforms. It's phenomenal. YouTube Gaming Live was the only one that didn't gain nearly as much ground. So like I said, I will be digging into this a little bit more. I already have like 5 or 6 pages of notes in my notebook about this story. So it's going to be a bit of a doozy. So stay tuned for that this week. Speaking of pieces that have been written on the Virtual Economy website, Mike, you wrote about Epic this week.
I did. And I was really excited to write about this because, how do I want to put this? I think that there was a lack of context in some of the pieces that I saw pop up. This is not... I'm not trying to throw shade on anybody who wrote up the news. It is absolutely important news. I think that what's really important is that we talk about the context for some of the data that came out and talk about how the data came out and how that impacts the context and the interpretation.
And I think that really does speak to where you and I do things just a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Just a little different. It's because that's what we established, or what I established at Game Daily, is it isn't just about business news. It isn't just about gaming news. It's about putting it in context for the reader.
Sure. Absolutely.
So that's what we're doing today.
There were a lot of stories that popped up that said that Epic is losing money on EGS. And if you just... That is not inaccurate.
No, it's really not. But it is lacking in context, in broader context, especially from the business perspective.
So let's talk about the data first.
Yes.
Epic lost $181 million in 2019 on EGS.
Yes.
So if you just look at the EGS activities, it spent $181 million, right?
Sure.
So they were not able to recoup that.
Sure.
In 2020, Epic lost $273 million on EGS. Mm-hmm. They spent $444 million in 2020 on exclusives.
Sure.
And we know from the data that they put forward at the end of 2020 that third-party sales on EGS in 2020 were $265 million, right? So they didn't
That's
even recoup.
That's not a slouch.
No, it's not a slouch, but they clearly did not recoup that money.
Sure.
Now, Epic Games says that it was on track to bring in $3.65 billion in revenue in 2020. This is company-wide, with a 40% profit margin, which puts net profits at $1.54 billion.
Okay.
So I want to put that in context, right?
Sure.
So even though they have lost this money on EGS, the company is profitable to the tune of $1.54 billion in 2020.
I wonder why. Is it possibly because Fortnite continues to print money?
Yes, and Unreal Engine is so widely used. So between those two things, I mean, think about how much royalty money they must be getting from, let's say, Disney. The Mandalorian.
Yeah, absolutely. Because remember that they're not charging small developers anymore because they don't need to. They don't need to charge small developers for licenses on Unreal anymore. Mm-hmm. And they ended up, I think this was back in like 2018, they ended up giving a bunch of money back to indie developers because they're like, we don't need your money.
They still have the Mega Grants program. Right, they've returned money because they reduced their...
Up to 4 years.
Yeah, up to 4 years. They reduced their royalty or their revenue share. And then they've had the Mega Grants as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of funding that goes back into the market. And we'll talk a little bit about intent and how success is defined.
Sure. All right? Okay. So
the implication from a lot of the stories is that Epic Games Store is not successful because Epic Games Store lost money. I challenge that.
So what does successful within these metrics mean then? Does it mean that because it lost money, what does that have to do with success?
Well, I think that because there are a lot of writers in the enthusiast space that do not have a business background, that haven't looked at business plans, that don't understand that when we talk about something on a yearly basis, it's because we need an arbitrary breaking point to look at how money does so that we can be comparative, because comparative is important. If you don't have the understanding, no one ever taught you how big projects work and how startup initiatives, whether those are full companies or initiatives within larger companies, if no one ever told you how those work,
how are you supposed to know?
How are you supposed to know?
This is why you took the time at Game Informer to train up your interns.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I took the time that I did when I was at Game Daily to chat with my news writers and my news team about what it is to be successful. Success in the game industry is not just about money. It is about engagement.
Right. And it's also not just about money when you are talking about a company that is not public. So let's talk about this and how this data rolled out, because this is going to be the breadcrumb trail that explains why things are being framed in the way they are.
Okay.
Now, when we talk about public companies, as we do every quarter when we have our earnings shows, right, that is information that comes from the company that needs to be presented in such a way so that there is transparency to shareholders, yes, and the SEC monitors those things, right?
Because they have a fiduciary responsibility.
And a legal obligation to report those numbers.
Sure.
So when we're seeing those numbers, we are seeing them in the same context, reported in the same way. There's always very likely positive spin, mm-hmm, coming from those companies. Remember, they control those numbers.
So yeah, absolutely.
It's not to say that those numbers are, that it's completely objective when we look at those numbers. There's always, they want to paint themselves in the best light.
Of course, right? That's kind of the point with investor relations.
With a private company, they are under no obligation to report any of their financial data to anybody but their investors.
That's right.
So when we have this data come out, it is very important to understand how the data came out.
Sure.
Now, there were depositions, there was discovery. Reminding you, this is all part of the lawsuit between Epic and Apple.
That is where the root is with all of this reporting, is that it came from Apple.
Mm-hmm. And specifically, it came from Apple's extensive court filing. So the way Apple paints these numbers is to make Epic look bad. How could they possibly run a successful storefront on iOS when they can't run their own successful storefront? So Apple, as a public company, defining what success looks like for Epic, the private company, its opponent in a massive legal battle. And what happened was, unfortunately, I did see a lot of reporters just parrot Apple's framing for this.
And listen, this isn't about shaming anyone. This isn't about throwing shade at all. This comes down to just, you know, not necessarily knowing.
Right. And it's no one report that did this, by the way.
No.
This was a common theme that we saw when we were looking at the reporting, was it was parroting a lot of the what Apple had to say about Epic's finances and cherry-picking things. Now, the reason I say cherry-picking is because Epic
also... That's what
also,
Apple did. Apple cherry-picked.
Right. And Epic had its own filing as well. So if you look at what Apple says, Apple frames the EGS as, quote, may never be profitable. I'm going to be honest with you. That's the case of with everything. You walk into something, you walk into initiative, you have a good sense, right? If you are Epic and you're doing something like Epic Game Store, and if your only goal is profitability, if your only goal is massive profitability, then
listen,
you still don't know what's going to happen. You have a good idea, but we'll talk about Epic's goals in a second.
But it's not even that. Like, if we look at anything in business, and again, if we just pull this back to a 30,000 foot view, you need to spend money to make money. You
absolutely
have to invest not just in your company and the initiatives, but your people. So you got to spend money,
right,
to make money.
That's why that
adage exists.
And even if your reasoning is good and you perfectly execute your business plan,
you can't control external factors.
Right. And it could be something very minor, like, okay, your marketing, your guess about the marketing was wrong, or someone else entered the market at the same time and did what you're doing better or overshadowed you. Or there's a global pandemic, which completely changes.
Curse you, pepperoni!
So when Apple says Epic Game Store may never be profitable, I say, duh. Like, there's no way to know that. But what Epic did say was this: based on its business plan and its trajectory and its data, EGS is looking like it will be profitable single year in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
So if they execute their plan and everything continues going on the same trajectory, at the end of 2023, they will have earned more money in that year than they spent.
Okay.
And then by 2027, it will be cumulatively profitable. I tried so hard to say that word right and I missed it.
Cumulatively.
Cumulus and stratus. We're not talking about clouds, are we?
We're not talking about clouds.
So that means by 2027, all of the money they've spent and all of the money they've earned will be in the black. Okay? That's, again, we're talking 6 years down the road. So when Apple says, may never be profitable, yeah, it may never be profitable. Like, anything Apple does may never be profitable. Those new AirPod Pro over-the-ear headsets that they're selling for $500 or whatever.
Yeah, no.
Like, may never be profitable.
It's not... I understand why they're framing it like that. They want to make Epic look bad.
They want to make Epic look bad. They want to make themselves look good. They want to make it seem... They want to color the court's perception of Epic's motives. And this happens on both sides, by the way. This absolutely happens on both sides.
Absolutely. Why wouldn't it? That's what the purpose of this is. Okay, so let's move on. Let's talk a little bit more about the numbers.
Okay. So... We know, again, from the end of 2020 that their monthly active users were up 75% year over year. That was December 2019 to December 2020. And play hours were up 70% year over year, 2019 to 2020. So context is really important here.
Yes.
And especially when we're talking about large-scale new initiatives, and especially when we're talking about taking on a first mover and a market leader. We're talking about versus Steam. So remember, this is where Apple's saying, like, oh, look, they might not even be profitable. Well, everybody else is looking at this going, they have to spend a ton of money in order to compete with Steam.
For user acquisition. As we have talked about over and over and over again, the most expensive part of launching anything new is acquiring users. Getting eyeballs and getting engagement on whatever it is that you're launching is the most expensive portion of your launch.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Absolutely. So
any mobile developer will tell you this.
Yeah.
Publisher, for that matter.
And that's exactly what's going on. Epic is in a massive user acquisition phase right now. But I also want to talk about...
What do you think happened with Game Pass?
Exactly.
Game Pass is the same thing.
Absolutely.
Where they had... Exactly the they, same. They had so much that they put into the front end of user acquisition with Game Pass. No one blinked.
Mm-hmm.
No one blinked about Game Pass because it was Game Pass.
Right.
And because it was Xbox, quite frankly.
And again, this is not data we would normally see exposed in this way.
No, this is not something that they would even talk about necessarily.
Because, again, going back to that how you frame things, if you look at Sony, if you look at Microsoft, when they report out their games divisions, remember, again, this is an analog to me because we're talking about smaller portions of larger companies.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Like EGS is a piece of the larger Epic company.
Yeah, absolutely.
They do not present all data for the games divisions at Sony and Microsoft.
I know.
They very selectively pick metrics. They pick their KPIs that they want to report to the public. And Microsoft moved away from console sales, right? And now they talk about usership. They talk about
the ecosystem.
Yep. So when we talk about EGS not making money, I still see this as investment. Now, does that mean that EGS is ultimately going to be a financially successful endeavor?
Probably not.
But here's the thing. Epic is a private company. It doesn't have to be. They have no obligation to shareholders.
But here's the deal. They got that Fortnite money.
They do have that Fortnite money. And Epic Game Store, look, I can't speak to exactly what Epic's goals are, but Tim Sweeney tweeted out after this news started breaking, he's like, yeah, we've spent a lot of money and it's been wildly successful. We're on track. Everything is going the way we expect things to go. This is not news to us. The fact that it's news to you is, well, fine, but you're not reporting this in con. I mean, he didn't come out and say
but
the tone of it was, I'm fine with this.
Yeah,
like,
this is
I'm
okay.
Not worried by this.
Okay, so let's continue.
So one of the things that I did in this story, and you can go and read it, was I actually looked at IPO data. Now, again, not that there's a perfect analog here, but when we talk about...
Because we don't know if Epic is on the road to an IPO.
Right.
We just don't.
But the reason I talked about it was, if you look at a lot of companies that are on the road to IPO, look at how much money they lose up to and through that IPO.
Unity. Unity is a brilliant analog to this because they have their own development platform. They don't have, like, their own games division because they don't have a Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a storefront, but they've got the Unity... You know, they got their Unity asset store. So, I mean, like, Unity lost a ton of money
and still raked in tons of investment. So when you're talking about success, Now, I'm not saying that Epic is going to IPO. They have no reason to go to IPO. They are profitable.
Yeah, they're profitable. That they're profitable.
They don't need to. They can continue on their trajectory. But here's the thing: if they never IPO and they never have shareholders, then they can afford, based on all of their other activities, and assuming that nothing major changes or they're able to adapt and continue this same performance and trajectory. Remember, now it's not just Fortnite; it's Fortnite, Rocket League, and Fall Guys.
Fall Guys. Yeah, seriously.
They can afford Tim Sweeney.
That Fall Guys money makes me happy in a way I didn't realize that I could be happy.
So Tim Sweeney could at the end of the day and go, okay, we're losing $20 million a year on Epic Games Store, but we're funding developers. We're creating a better ecosystem by securing developers. We are ensuring that there is no monopoly in the space by holding Steam's feet to the fire to make sure that Steam keeps innovating. Remember, when you have a monopoly, typically the reason why... One of the reasons why monopolies are frowned upon is because competition breeds innovation.
Absolutely. It does.
So Epic, Tim Sweeney could turn around and say, and as long as investors aren't unhappy, and hold that thought.
Because I want to talk about that.
Yeah. As long as investors aren't happy, and as long as the money keeps coming in, remember, they just bought a mall for their new campus.
A literal mall.
Yeah.
A literal mall. Literal mall. Like, not a literal, okay.
So they could turn around and say, look, we're not a public company. We're not a public benefit company. We don't really necessarily tout that we have a triple bottom line that's people, profit, and planet. But we have this belief that our activities should give back to the community at large. They can stomach an annual loss on EGS because it is fulfilling other metrics of success that aren't just financial. We are so used to looking at public companies and evaluating
money alone.
Because public companies ultimately do have one metric of success. Are they returning value to shareholders?
Absolutely. And private companies are not beholden to the same metrics of success. They can instead look at things like, what's our impact? Mm-hmm. What's our impact on the community? What's our impact on the game industry at large? What are we doing to better ourselves on a regular basis?
So if Tim Sweeney says, okay, fine, we are not financially profitable for EGS. Our entire company is wildly financially profitable. We can afford for this to be a loss leader.
Get that Fall Guys money.
Yeah, we can afford for EGS to be a loss leader for our corporate vision.
Oh my goodness. Okay, before we continue, because I really want to talk about Epic's, the news that we have this week, right? Mm-hmm. Before we get into that, the loss leader portion of this is so important. What do we have in our office?
Consoles.
We have consoles in our office. Consoles are consistent loss leaders for the companies that produce them. They are supposed to be software sellers. Every single time that we talk about consoles being loss leaders, it's just expected. That's just what you're supposed to see. A storefront being a loss leader is not necessarily something that we've discussed before, but it makes so much sense.
Especially when you look beyond financial metrics of success.
Absolutely.
And again, based on everything we've seen about Tim Sweeney, and this is not me apologizing for Epic or being an Epic fanboy because
they have made some serious missteps, like their propaganda.
And I talk about that in
nonsense.
The story. And I talk about the statistics of who plays Fortnite and why I think that was such a misguided activity.
It was
the
not
propaganda
a good idea.
around this fight with Apple.
No, I don't like that at all, because what that ends up doing is it creates an emotional attachment to a corporation, which, listen, as we have said many times on this show, we don't stand corporations in this house. It's not a good idea.
So I would encourage, if you are writing about, if you happen to be listening to this podcast, if you are thinking about what success means in the corporate world, I think it's really important to look at a company's specific context. If it's a public company,
yeah.
The truth of the
money.
Matter is, they have to return value to shareholders unless they are a public benefit corporation, and then it's a slightly different situation. But if you are a traditional C corp or S corp and you have shareholders, your job is to maximize value for those shareholders.
So let's talk about maximizing value, because Epic also announced a new round of funding. $1 billion.
Yep.
$1 billion. Epic's new valuation is now $28.7 billion, which is up from $4.5 billion as of July 2018. And this was 9 months after Fortnite's Battle Royale launch.
Yeah. Look at that valuation just exploding.
It's banana pants.
Yep. Sony was in on this round for $200 million, which is an addition to its previous investment of $250 million. So Sony's almost in for half a bill at this point.
Considering the technology look at Sony Motion Pictures, right? Sony would be foolish not to invest in Epic based on what good they're doing for the motion picture industry.
Mm-hmm.
And for television as well.
Absolutely.
So other investors include Appaloosa, Bailey Gifford, Fidelity Management and Research Company, LLC, GIC, funds and accounts advised by T. Rowe Price Associates. This is a biggie. Ontario Teachers Pension Plan Board. Listen, Ontario may be the trash belt of Canada right now because... At me on Twitter and I will tell you why.
But not this week because you're taking a break.
But not this week because I am not on Twitter this week. But I love this because this continues to prove the point that Canada really does take video games seriously. Funds and accounts managed by BlackRock, ParkWest, KKR, AllianceBernstein, Altimeter, Franklin Templeton, and Luxor Capital.
Just to real quickly double back on Ontario Teachers Pension Plan. They also previously funded Epic. They were also part of the round of funding that got Ubisoft out from under Vivendi.
Again. Well, and I mean, Ubisoft is in Canada.
Sure.
Right?
No,
I mean,
absolutely.
They do have a significant presence but in just to say Montreal that and Toronto.
Ontario, the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan Board, like, kind of gets it when it comes to gaming. It's
they really do.
Really smart.
I'm so interested to know, like, who's driving that ship.
Yeah.
I kind of want to interview them.
Mm.
Like, a little bit.
Mm.
I want to know more. Anyway, continue.
So the August 2020 round was $1.78 billion. Many of the new round investors were part of both. As we said, the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan was one of them. The funding is going to be used to, quote, accelerate Epic's work around building connected social experiences in Fortnite, Rocket League, and Fall Guys, while empowering game developers and creators with Unreal Engine, Epic Online Services, and the Epic Game Store.
The Epic Game Store is in line with supporting game developers.
Yep. So as I said, I would not be surprised if down the road, and of course we won't know about it unless there's more court filings, because Epic has no obligation to report its finances.
And they don't.
Yeah.
They don't. They don't talk about their numbers unless it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah, even
they
the
keep
numbers,
that to themselves.
Even the numbers we got in December were not contextualized. It was just a stat sheet.
Yeah.
So, again, success, and this is the big takeaway for me. We need to stop assigning our own expectations of what success looks like to other people and to companies, especially private companies.
Private companies is the big one. Public companies...
Yep.
Shareholders, bottom line, we get it, whatever, fine. They have to all do things the same way, or relatively the same way. But looking at companies like Bethesda, before Bethesda was acquired by Microsoft, they didn't provide any information either.
Yeah.
Zenny had no reason to mm-hmm. give the public any information about their finances. I am also a giddy human because maybe I'll get to see what their finances look like because of Microsoft.
Maybe. But again, they're not under...
Feed me data!
Feed me.
Feed me data. That's all I know. Listen, if you can feed me data and you are in a position to feed me data. Anyway.
So that was it?
That was it.
We did it.
This has been episode 79, and it has been a lot of fun to record. I hope that you had as much fun listening to us as we did chatting today.
I did have a lot of fun.
You had a lot of fun?
I had a lot of fun.
We always have fun.
We do.
What's the point of doing this if
you don't have hopefully fun? Hopefully our audio... was a little bit better. We changed our setup a little bit. Thankfully, our desks are here and set up now.
Set up in the sense that the legs are not collapsing
yes.
off the bottom.
I love these desks, but it was a long week. It was the long, dark tea time of my soul.
Of your desk soul.
Yes.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at @VirtualEconcast. I am at Amanda Farrow, but I am also at Absent this week and potentially next week.
Ooh, and I am at Footerish, FUTTERISH. I will be there if you want to tweet at Amanda and want her to see something. You can always just tweet it at me and I'll shove my phone in her face.
Fair enough, I guess. If you enjoyed what you heard today, we would love it if you could subscribe to our RSS feed. And you can find that, and that also includes our articles.
Yes.
At virtualeconcast.com. You can also listen to us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and wait, there's one more.
Pocket Sand.
Pocket full of pocket sand. I want to add that as a button and then like start my own website. This is pocketsand.com. Like, I'm so tempted. So we would love it if you could subscribe. And if you enjoyed what you heard, you know, tell us. Let us know what you think. Review the show. It lets the algorithm gods know that, you know, we're worth paying attention to.
Yep. And we also love listener questions. So if you have any questions.
We get so giddy over listener questions.
We do.
Put them in our Discord.
Yeah, so you can drop them into our Discord. If you need an invite to the Discord, just hit me up this week. And I'll get you an invite. You can also DM us on Twitter at VirtualEconCast. You can send them to podcast@fsquared.biz. If you have some super secret information that you don't feel comfortable sharing on Twitter via DM or via email, you can hit us up, hit me up, I guess this week, for my Signal number, and we can chat there in a much more secure way. Also, we dropped the link to the epic story that I wrote in the show notes, but we will be writing every week, whether it's one or both of us, on the virtualeconcast.com website. And this week, or last week, we started a Ko-fi account, ko-fi.com account. And the reason we did that is because we're looking to grow the show and add some new features, including weekly transcriptions.
We really do want to start transcribing the show. And listen, these shows are so important to us, and we know that they're super important to all of you as well, but we also want to make sure that we are being inclusive to, you know, people that are deaf or hard of hearing, mm-hmm. and they would prefer transcribed podcast episodes, mm-hmm. so we want to take care of that portion of the, you know, the folks that want to listen to our show without necessarily having to listen.
Yep. And that does take some resources, and
it's significantly.
Yeah. Transcription is not inexpensive.
It's spendy. And we are parents of four children, and we also have other things that we are doing on a regular basis. Transcribing each of these episodes on our own would take all week, and we don't have time. Yes. We barely have time to be people.
It's true. So if you're interested in helping us, you can visit our Ko-fi link at ko-fi.com/virtual economy.
There we go.
Yep. And we'll be back next week. Remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll see you soon.